here we go. It's Friday, June 22nd. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, coming to you loud and clear from the undisclosed location that we're in here in the Sam Nation studios, deep behind the orange curtain. This executive order of Trump's is everything it isn't. I will explain exactly what I mean by this, because right now, either Trump is absolutely brilliant tactician or he stumbled quite by accident on a brilliant end run around the Republican, Democrat, and media establishments. All of this in today's show, I will parse it out for you piece by piece. The executive order, this is, by the way, as a side note, hot takes are never a good idea. They're not a good idea in the world of media. And one of the great advantages here on the program, doing it once a week on Friday, is we've allowed the news cycle to run. Fridays tend to be, although not always, tend to be slower news days. And so it is an opportunity to reflect on the week after a period of time has elapsed. Now, what I will tell you about today will not begin to be, I think, materially evident until the weeks to come. But you will be prepared and you will know what to listen for when you're listening to the mainstream media prattle on about this. And my friends, prattle they will. I promise you that. So you know that Trump now, midweek, signed an executive order, and this after a shrill cacophony of criticism over how his administration is handling the separated children at the border. Statistically, let me give you some numbers here. Well, no, I'm not going to give you the numbers. It doesn't matter. This isn't about the numbers. It was never about the facts. It was always about those pictures of kids in cages that dated back to 2014. It was Obama's administration that created the facility where the picture was taken, that was put all over the media, all over the internet, mostly, ironically, mostly by Obama's own people. This is the absolute crazy hypocrisy of this all. So you have ex-Obama administration officials who are fueling this fake news nonsense propaganda against Trump using images of a crisis developed by their own administration, basically the creation of an issue that they themselves played varying roles in. Do you think for a minute that this was not intentional? No, of course it was. It was 100% intentional. This was, from the get-go, a clever but time-tested use of propaganda. Socialists use propaganda very, very effectively, and it has always nothing to do with facts and everything to do with emotion. Now, there's a truism in politics. The minute that you have to start explaining yourself, you've lost. And the reason for this is that most people out there are not you and I. Most people out there are, quite frankly, stupid. And stupid people, well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but they generally go with their emotional takes on things rather than their logical takes. So you and I, we can sit and we can talk to our friends and say, yes, this is terrible over here. That's what's happening to these kids. But look, if you've got mom and dad going on a bank robbery, mom and dad get arrested, guess what? They are going to be separated from their kids. If mom and dad both go into a grocery store and pass a bad check, the check bounces, it's determined that it was fraud, mom and dad get arrested, same deal. They go to jail. They don't go to jail with their kids. That's not how it works. This isn't North Korea, for Pete's sake. In fact, all the arguments that we're a totalitarian regime fly in the face of reality. Well, North Korea being one of those places where, you know, you commit a crime and three generations of your family go to jail. I guess, how humane is that? So, illogically, the entire argument about this was turned on its head and it became all about pictures. It became all about emotions. And it produced these type of reactions in the media that were so extreme and crazy that it led to some decisions at the White House that I believe may turn out to be very brilliant. Now, here is just a taste, and in case you missed it and you were hiding under a rock or you didn't want to see any of this, this is some of the wonderful members of the mainstream media talking earlier in the week as the temperature was getting very hot about this issue. Listen to this.
Some have argued that these detention centers are reminiscent of Japanese internment camps or even concentration camps in Nazi Germany.
It's always bad when you're having to distance yourself from Nazi Germany.
Well, the images suggest those of concentration camps, families being cut apart.
I know children are being marched away to showers. Are they being told they are, just like the Nazis said that they were taking people to showers and then they never came back?
Donald Trump is turning this nation into Nazi Germany and turning these into concentration camps.
This is what happened 76 years ago to Japanese Americans in internment camps.
They are the tactics that have been used through history by the worst purveyors of pure evil, including slave traders, including Nazis, including terrorists.
Now, right on the day that this executive order reversing or instructing, rather, the Border Patrol to end this family separation business, I had a meeting with a friend, and this friend is a Democrat. Yes, I have friends who are Democrats. And I love this guy. And we're talking and we're catching up. And he says to me, how can you still like Trump? Of all the weeks this week, how can you like Trump? And for one, he's been listening to, you know, Scarborough talk about children being marched into showers, and it's a smart guy, but these people actually believe this nonsense. On some emotional level, they buy into it. But most of this is hyperbole. And you know what I told him? I said, actually, I am most disappointed by Trump today. Of all the days of the Trump presidency, I'm disappointed not that he didn't do anything about these poor kids, quote unquote, but that he issued an executive order that on its face is a violation of law. Now, I went home after this and playing this conversation through my head, and I thought, but Sam, you've missed the obvious. And I went to the text of the executive order. Now, the text of the I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. But the text of the executive order has something very interesting in it, because in Section 3, Article A, deals with the temporary detention policy and the change. This is the material part of the executive order that everybody's talking about. And I quote, "The Secretary of Homeland Security shall, to the extent permitted by law, maintain custody of alien families during the pendency of any criminal property," blah, 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 blah. And that is the line that everybody missed in the moment. Because it's, aha, Trump gave in. He's thrown in the white flag. And I had the same reaction, too. And I have a strong feeling against executive orders. I'll talk a little bit more about that as the program unfolds today. But this executive order is nothing. It is not worth the paper it was printed on. And Trump, whether on purpose, by design, or by accident, turned the media and the establishment game on top of them. They turned it completely against them. All right. If they want to have their fake news, if they want to have their fake photographs, if they want to have their silly, absurd exaggerations about my administration being Nazi Germany, I'm going to show them. I'm going to have my own photo op. I'm going to send the first lady down to the border. I'm going to play this game that she changed my mind. And I'm going to hold a big public press conference where I sign my enormous, ginormous, huge signature onto an executive order that means absolutely nothing. And the reason this executive order means absolutely nothing is it flies in the face of established law, not mind you, from a conservative Supreme Court, not mind you, from a conservative circuit court somewhere in the heartland of the great United States of America. No, it flies in the face of an order of a ruling that dates back to the Clinton administration, coming out of, from all places, the most bananas left-wing circuit in the country. Yes, for those of you who are court watchers, the Ninth Circuit, which would be our circuit here in Southern California. So the Ninth Circuit ruled you cannot imprison kids. That's the ruling. 20 days. You get 20 days with your kids in the slammer as a real, and regarding these immigration holds. And after 20 days, guess what? You have to do one of two things. You have to release the entire family, or you release the little muchachos. They're out of there. Now, the entire executive order, I'm not going to read it word for word. You will have to take my word as an attorney. I've read it through. There is no other give in or no other relaxation of a strict enforcement policy. Zero tolerance. Everybody's going to be criminally prosecuted if they enter the country illegally. So, in effect, this executive order says, you're right, to the extent provided by law, 20 days. That is all we are giving you, 20 days. So basically now, kids can be in there, but only for 20 days with their parents, and after which point they will be separated. So when I say I'm preparing you tonight, or today, this morning, I'm preparing you for what's going to happen next week, we're getting to it. And here it is. Next week, the conversation is going to shift. And it's going to shift, and it will reveal the entire objective of the left in what they have been pushing for. Because this was never about the kids. This was never about babies being separated from their parents. This was never about any of that. This is about crippling Trump's efforts to enforce immigration, period. And what the left wants is they want everyone out. They want everybody out. They don't just want the kids out. They want the parents out, too. And what you are going to hear next week, promise you this, what you're going to hear is the same cacophony of voices saying, well, this only fixed the problem for 20 days. This only, what a buffoon. What a buffoon. But the brilliant, if this is tactical, and I have some reason to believe it is, because I think Trump is a lot smarter of a guy than the media and his opponents give him credit for. If this is tactical, it turns the left-wing liberal establishment against itself. Because it essentially creates, it's a court-created, legal-created paradox by two traditionally hostile entities to immigration. And that would be the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I mean, immigration enforcement. I'm doing a little shorthand here. But immigration enforcement. Who's a big opponent of that? The liberal Ninth Circuit. Who else? Congress. Traditionally. Republican or Democrat. Doesn't matter. So this is absolutely, folks, where it's headed. Now, remember, who can solve this problem? Who is in control? The folks that are in control here are the legislators. And the legislators are the elected members of the House and of the Senate. They could fix it like that. Remember, the executive branch, the president only enforces the laws. Now, and I'll get to this when we get more into the executive orders. There's some very interesting things related to this, and I have strong opinions about it. I want to share that with you. But this is how it works, which makes statements like this from Chuck Schumer all the more ridiculous.
President Trump, if you're truly ashamed of what's happening at the border, get your team together and undo this shameful policy immediately, which you can do with a flick of the pen. There's no need for legislation. There's no need for anything else. You can do it. Mr. President, you started it. You can stop it. Legislation is not the way to go here when it's so easy for the president to sign it. It's an excuse.
No, what? Now, look, I've always told you Chuck Schumer is a liar. I mean, if there's any I know they're all liars. I get it. But I'm telling you, Chuck Schumer does it so well. Occasionally, his demagoguery gets the best of him. And the lie becomes self-evident within the context of the quote itself. And that is what you have here. He knows better than anybody, having served in the Senate, I don't know, however many years, decades. He knows how the system works. He understands the constitutional separation of powers. He knows about the Flores case decided by the Ninth Circuit. He knows the president. He knows all of this, guys. It's not something that is just fallen out of the sky. And this guy is not, he's not ignorant. So he is lying. It is a lie. The flick of a pen, the president can fix this. It's actually not true. He's asking for an executive order, thinking that Trump would not take the bait and that he would, like, steadfastly oppose it. But the lie is who can fix it. The lie is that that Congress is the one that needs to fix this and could. Instead, what you had all week were congressional members acting like pontificators and news media, you know, opinion junkies, and not fulfilling their responsibilities under the Constitution. Okay, more on this specifically. We'll get to Rachel Maddow, too. I've got to, and I also have, I have a little sprinkle of what I think is going to come next week and more of what you're going to hear next week, and actually a confirmation of exactly what it is that I'm telling you. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rachofsky, Sam Nation. All right, here is the sprinkle. Here is what we can expect to see next week and the week after and the week after that. Because I'll tell you right now, the issue is not going to go away, and it's not going away specifically because the executive order that Trump signed has a loophole in it that defers to existing law that makes the detention of illegal immigrant alien children unlawful after 20 days. And I'm referring to the Flores decision, Flores versus Reno. That would be Janet Reno, the now deceased attorney general in the Clinton administration, if you remember her. All right. To illustrate the coming shift, I have a first today. Well, we'll call it the current reaction, the current media sentiment. And this would have been Rachel Maddow. I know you heard about her crying. I'm taking it that maybe many of you don't watch her program. But this is her on Tuesday on her eponymous MSNBC show talking about the kids. And she is overcome by emotion.
This has just come out from the Associated Press. Trump administration officials have been sending babies and other young children to at least three. Can we put up the graphic of this? Thank you. Do we have it? No. Three tender age shelters in South Texas. Lawyers and medical providers. Just, I think I'm going to have to hand this off. Yeah. Sorry. That does it for us tonight. We'll see you again tomorrow. Now it is time for the last word with Lawrence O'Donnell.
Ah! Now look, the part, and producer Robbie pointed this out absolutely correctly as we were doing show prep earlier. And he you know, his point on this is true. It's, Rachel Maddow is not, she's not one of these goobers on CNN or MSNBC that are just vacuous and dumb and uninformed. She's a policy wonk. She knows better. So you had Obama back in 2014 literally wrapping illegal immigrant kids in tinfoil sleeping on concrete floors? And where was she? Where were her colleagues? Where was the left? Nowhere. Zero. They didn't care because Obama was their dude. It didn't matter. Plus, in the grand scheme of things, they felt, whether it was true or not, that Obama was a liberal on the issue of illegal immigration and would be an ally in an open borders policy. And by and large, even though there were a number of prosecutions and a number of deportations in the Obama years, Obama continuously signaled that there would be various exemptions and amnesties, prompting the largest exodus in the last decade or two across the border, right? So we remember all of this. But they got a pass, and now she's whining about it. So one, it's 100% propaganda, emotional. Rachel Maddow knows better. But here now, you remember Samantha Bee, here now is a little bit of a, we'll call it a dollop. Dollop. Well, a sprinkle, we'll say a sprinkle, of what we're going to hear more of. And in this clip, you have to pay very careful attention. The nugget comes right at the end of the clip, so you would almost miss it. But don't worry, I'll be here right afterwards to explain it step by step. Samantha Bee, on Wednesday, talking about baby internment camps.
Yay! No more baby internment camps, just regular internment camps. Cool, that's what we call a win in 2018. To be clear, I am happy that at least these kids are theoretically going to stay with their parents, but mommy and me jails are not a solution. They're not new, and they're also not legal.
See it? See it? Did you hear it? They're not legal. So now, aha, it's not legal. They're starting to get hip to that exemption that Obama's legal team and the Department of Homeland Security put in that executive order that he signed on Wednesday. And you start to see that that is where they're going to go with this. It's not legal. Now, I submit to you that this was a strategic decision from the start. I submit to you that it is a way of playing the media for fools. All right, you want to have a propaganda war? You want to make this all about the imagery? Fine. I will go down there. Well, sending the first lady. I will sign this executive order. I will talk about how we need to have mercy. And then I, Donald Trump, I'm now speaking for him. I, Donald Trump, am going to lay this all back at the feet of the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals, left-wing court, and at the feet of Congress where it belongs. And that, my friends, is nothing short of brilliant. If it wasn't intended, it certainly was a fantastic move. All right, I'll have more on this after our legal segment. You heard about that kid that toppled the statue? Kansas City? Oh, if you haven't, this is great. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, rarely wrong, but always right. And we're making radio great again, even if it is just a podcast for now. Yes, the email. If you need to email me, I do check my own email. A lot of hosts do not do this. In California, it's highly paid minimum wage interns. In other states, it's something akin to slave labor, checking their emails. That's a whole separate issue. Wages in California, there are no starting jobs anymore for anybody. And internships are becoming more and more difficult. We'll talk about that at some point. It'll be more relevant. But anyway, I want to take you to a story. A woman named Sarah Goodman in Kansas City has a kid named Troy. Now, Sarah Goodman, the Goodman family, is attending a wedding at a local community center. And this community center has on display a statue. And the statue is fairly valuable. Now, the kid, little Troy, believe he's 3 years old, stumbles into the room as unattended and is doing what, if you're a parent, you know what three-year-olds do, right? When three-year-olds are left unattended, do you know what they do? Well, they get themselves into trouble. Oh, he's five. Doesn't matter. I have a five-year-old. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to leave her in a community center unattended. Because this is the age of curiosity. And as a part of a child's normal development, that kid is going to touch things. Now, it is up to a good parent to begin to teach their children boundaries. There is an appropriate time to touch things, and there is an appropriate time when you put your hands behind your back, interlocking your fingers, and you touch with your eyes, right? As parents, you've all had that talk with your kids. Well, anyway, little Troy, unattended, on the loose, starts climbing on the base that is holding up the statue and in plain sight of other people and of course, closed circuit cameras, topples the statue, breaks it. It breaks, falls a bunch of pieces. So what do you think happens next? Well, the insurance company, there's an insurance company. This is how these things work. It's generally speaking, if there is insurance, yes, insurance will cover it. But insurance companies, and this is not being reported anywhere, but I'll just explain this to you, give you again a little sneak peek from a lawyer's perspective on how this works. When an insurance company has to pay out damages, do you think that that's the final word? No, because the insurance company wants to recover the money that they lost, right? It's like if you get rear-ended. You get rear-ended and your insurance company pays, if you've got full coverage, they pay for the loss to your car. But then what do? They file something called a subrogation claim where they go after the person that hit you behind you to recover what they paid out because that person is ultimately responsible. Does this make sense? And that is precisely what is happening here. The insurance company that insured the city for losses at this community center isn't necessarily denying the claim. They're willing to pay it, but they're looking to subrogate, get back their money out from the people that had the kid. So the question is it legal? I got to tell you right now, if you live in California, watch out. You are, as a parent, it's called vicarious liability. Means you're vicariously liable. You step into the place of your child, legally speaking, if your child willfully destructs property or willfully injures somebody. And you're held, by the way, a lot of states, this is interesting, because they're asking, do you know how much they're asking for here? $125,000? Do you have that kind of money laying around? Probably not. So the family is sweating. In California, interestingly enough, there is a statute. There's a statutory limit to the amount of money that somebody can pursue from you in the event that your child does something, your minor child does something bad. In California, it's $25,000. So it's a cap. So if this happened in California, the most that they could get from the parents, I believe, as I understand the incident, would be $25,000. But still, that's a S ton of money, right? Who wants to pay that out? Far more egregious, my friends, and I want to talk about this next, that we've handled the legal aspect of this. Can we talk about the parent, the mother, this insufferable Beezy that was all over television? I will play you some clips. You be the judge. Up next, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sarah Goodman, the mother of Little Troy, the destructor of Kansas City, breaker of fine art, was all over the media this week. Now, we almost missed this news story because we were too busy calling Trump a Nazi for interning children along with their parents who were caught illegally crossing the border. Now, the two stories, bear with me here, the two stories are actually analogous. Because if you are an aficionado of this program, if you are a loyal Samsonite, you know that I have a bias when it comes to parental responsibility. My bias is very simple. I think you as a parent are really pretty much responsible for everything that your child does, and you're responsible to set your child up for success in life, and that requires oftentimes making good decisions as a parent, and also teaching slash disciplining your child as needed, right? So the two stories, what did that include? The border issue and Sarah Goodman with Little Troy. Well, I'll tell you. The thing I was saying all week with this border issue, I was looking at the statistic from early May to early June. Do you know how many kids were 342 children were separated from 2,200 parents. And I read that statistic, and everybody was crying about, this is just so shameful. Trump is a Nazi. And I'm reading this, and I'm going, what lunatic parent takes their child, commits a felony with the child? That's what's going on, right? They know Trump is enforcing, right? They understand this is a very short window of time, right? This is just a month's worth of time. They are well aware that Trump has a zero tolerance policy, yet they're coming to the border, bringing their kids. It's like, I understand. Okay, they want to come into the U.S., but what about the people that are out on their luck? Dad lost his job. It's been 12 months. Disability has run out, unemployment, whatnot. It's all run out. Savings have been exhausted. Who would have sympathy for a family that takes their kids on a bank heist? The answer is literally nobody that I know of. No sane person would make an argument for that. But they're all making it's not the parents' fault. It's Trump's fault. Well, in that same vein, listen to Sarah Goodman talking about whose fault this was. Now, here she is on a UK network, ITV, on Tuesday, blaming the media and how they have construed the story, sensing, right, that the media is a little bit turning on her, right? They're saying this person, this mom hasn't been responsible, hasn't been a responsible parent. Listen to this.
When the press decides that they want to sway a story against you, the public retaliation is brutal, and it has had some effect on my family. Our media in Kansas City could have done this story differently. Maybe hidden dangers of taking your children to the local community center could have been a better headline.
Okay, we're going to talk about safety standards.
The headline should have been hidden dangers of taking your kids to the local community center. What? This is her being upset that, of course, they're calling her a lousy parent. So here is her answer to the question that I would want answered, right? I would want to know what's her sense of liability here? What's her sense of right and wrong? And here, listen to her, how she dances around this on Good Morning America on Monday.
There was never once a call to check on Troy. No one ever said, is your son okay? He ran in fear. He had a lot of red abrasions, a little cut right here. I was just around the corner, and that video doesn't tell the whole story. That type of artwork had absolutely no business being in that community center. I cannot believe that they allowed something so dangerous to be where kids play.
If my child toppled a $125,000 statue by climbing on it. And at five, it is five. Did we verify that? So the red abrasions, by the way, there would be a red mark on little Ava's A Money Money because I would swat her as quickly as I possibly. This is insane. You know why the kid is climbing on the statue? Because this is the way mom thinks. And when you have parents that make excuses for their kids, when you have parents that become apologists for their children at the expense of everybody else, at the expense of a community center's somebody's private property displayed in a community center, when they're not willing to admit any wrong of their child, all you're doing, wake up, people, all you're doing is raising a generation of little monsters that nobody's going to want to marry, let alone, you know, date, let alone employ. You're creating a generation of people that will have no personal responsibility. It's great. Future Democrat, right here. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, a little interesting bit of news going on is now that it is Gay Pride Month, I've stopped traveling, by the way, in June. I always somehow... I always forget it's Gay Pride Month, and I end up traveling to major capitals around this time of year. We, you know, because it's summer, it's the beginning of summer, it's a good time to go. Last year, I went with a buddy down to Mexico City around this time, and we ended up being in the heart of the Gay Pride Parade day on Saturday, whatever day that was in June. So anyway, it's Pride Month. And there was an article in the New York Times which caught my little eye. I'm going to share it with you. The piece is dated June 19th, earlier this week. New York Times title, Do You Know Where Your Pride T-Shirt Was Made? Now, if you're wondering where this article goes, I will tell you. Quite simply, it starts to opine and question if members of the gay community or gay rights sympathizers understand that a lot of their gear that they are wearing for these pride festivals is in fact coming out of countries that throw gay people off of rooftops, for example, or outlaw or ban homosexual acts, even if in private. I don't know why I thought this was so funny. And you know why? Because as long as I can remember, okay, my parents certainly victimized, though not victims, but victimized, and their families victimized by communist regimes, specifically the one in Czechoslovakia where they grew up. My parents routinely, out of principle, avoided. It's harder to do now, but in the 80s, I remember this. They were very principled about avoiding products, for example, coming out of Red China. Just didn't like to do it. And I remember even as late as high school, I was at the, do you remember the J. Peterman Company? Yeah, well, not just from the Seinfeld show, right? By the way, one of the best supporting characters, I think producer Robbie agrees with me, Mr. Peterman in Seinfeld. But anyway, it was a real thing. They started out with the catalog that had the little watercolor drawings of various items of clothing. I think, are you the recipient of my hand-me-down duster coat? Yes. Okay. So the day that I bought that coat, let me tell you a story. So the day I bought that coat, they went from having a catalog to having actual stores. And it was at that point that the whole thing went belly up. It just got, you know, companies will do that. But I was in the store that was at Fashion Island in Newport Beach. And at the store, I was admiring this fine white linen or whatever, some canvas, basically. Yeah, it's canvas. This duster cowboy coat, which has made its hands now into producer Robbie's closet. Well, at any rate, I'm buying this coat and I hear somebody in the store next to me, an older gentleman who looked to me to be perhaps a military veteran, telling the clerk that he would not buy a particular item of clothing that he was looking at because it was made in Vietnam. And he said exactly, I know what that regime did to us and does to people, and I will not support it. And my point with all this is that the New York Times and the left ridiculed this kind of conscientious objections, always did. I remember getting ridiculed by teachers, by professors. I would talk about this in high school and college, get ridiculed. And now enlightenment guaranteed has finally come to the New York Times when it deals with issues of pride. And so even the New York Times is now exploring their scruples with what these regimes out there, these bad actors are doing. Interesting. Just an observation, and I'm passing it along to you. When we come back, more on the border, I want to get to that. Also, there was a grilling on Monday, a grilling in the Senate. And I feel that since the weekend is upon us, it'd be a good idea for me to share that barbecue Horowitz with you a little later in the program. So get out your wax napkins. The inspector general got skewered on Capitol Hill, did not make the news. I want to share it with you because it was absolutely fantastic. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, the voice of reason, the king of common sense, rarely wrong, always right, coming to you loud and clear from our undisclosed location studios. Let me rephrase that. Our studios located in an undisclosed location. I could say it either way. The first way was a little bit awkward. So anyway, you know where we're not. I think that's the best way of putting it. All right. You know, I want to step away from the immediate issue of separating kids at the border and talk a little bit more broadly about immigration, illegal immigration as a whole. Because, again, as part of the I've already mentioned that the conversation in the coming weeks will shift and will shift away from the issue of separating kids and will move toward the issue of releasing everybody. Because that is the push, the objective, the entire objective right now with what this executive order is all about and what the left, what the media and all the people in Congress that have refused to act legislatively they know about the law. They understand that legally speaking, as it stands now, the president, the executive branch cannot hold, the Department of Homeland Security cannot hold children together with their parents for longer than 20 days. And if that's true, what happens after 20 days? Well, one of two things, right? This is not a really complicated issue to understand. Either, one, the kids are separated from their parents, so not immediately, but 20 days later, fine. Or, alternatively, you release them all. In Vox, left-wing online publication media, Vox Media, V-O-X, if you're familiar with it, an article came out yesterday. Flores agreement, Trump's executive order to end family separation might run afoul of a 1997 court ruling. And here, more opinions about this and a little bit of the procedural history. None of this, however, is important to read except for the conclusion of the piece. And the conclusion of the piece is this, and I quote, The Trump administration could hold itself to higher standards, but for that matter, it could also find an alternative to detaining immigrant families that still allowed the government to ensure they showed up in court. It does not appear inclined to do so, speaking of the Trump administration. See, here it is. We can't detain them all. We don't can't detain the kids. We can't separate them. Really, what Trump ought to do is let them go. And that is why we need a refresher, all of us. We need a refresher on why immigration policy is important. Number one, let me tell you this. Mexico, and I know every country has a slightly different story, but I will use Mexico as an example because they're immediately to our southern border, account disproportionately for the number of citizens per capita that come into this country illegally. And also because Mexico, of all the countries south of the border, is most aggressive in promulgating illegal immigration into this country. I would almost say this. Not almost. I am saying it. Mexico deliberately sends its citizens to this country and knows they're coming here illegally, encourages it. And when you look, if you work in downtown L.A., for example, you've passed the Mexican consulate there. It's a giant help. Let me help you place for how to survive as an illegal in the United States. That's what they do. I mean, it's a detail. But let me tell you this. This is part of their strategy. And if you want to know why, I will tell you. See, for Mexico and for American liberals in particular, politically, immigration, mass immigration, uncontrolled immigration, what do you want to call it? It's, of course, illegal immigration, but mass immigration is a mutually beneficial thing. Now, politically, you understand, right, why the left wants illegals here. They want illegals because there's a perception, correct or not, that illegals become a part of a depressed class, true, generally speaking, right? That then becomes and translates into a political force for the Democratic Party. We have seen this play out certainly in California, have we not? So we have that element to it. But politically, there is a counter fact here that occurs in Mexico and Honduras and El Salvador. These countries, we are told by economists, benefit tremendously from having hard currency, U.S. dollars flowing back from relatives that are abroad, being sent by Western Union. I mean, Western Union, folks, is only in business because of illegal immigration. I mean, who would send? When's the last time you sent a MoneyGram to somebody? Frickin' A. If they could move cash on ponies, the Pony Express would still be in business. I digress. But at any rate, it's an economic benefit, but there's also a political benefit. It is a political benefit because illegal immigration from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, et cetera, is a release valve for troublemakers. Now, before you jump all over me and saying, well, it's not all rapists and murderers yet. No, absolutely, you're right. I know for a fact the Mexican government does send bad actors here deliberately. They want to get rid of bad actors. And even the most closed and repressive regimes in world history have gladly expatriated troublemakers, right? Problem people. But I think there's another part of this. Well, wait, who, if you are running, there's a big election right now going on in Mexico. What do you think the issues are that they're running on? Graft, corruption, but also the great socialist state, the giveaway state, the state that redistributes wealth, promises made to poor people. The people, and I, this is just my take on it, but I believe that the people that are coming to the U.S. are mostly comprised of some of the more enterprising and risk-taking members of the society that they're coming from. In other words, if you are not a risk taker, chances are you're not going to be crossing the Sonoran Desert to make your way across the Rio Grande. Chances are you're not going to be risking putting yourself in prison, get dying somewhere, trapped, getting overheated in a back of a big rig smuggling you across the border. You're not going to take those risks. So it is a self-selected group of people that come here. And those are the people that I believe in many respects are politically inconvenient to their home countries. These are the people that are more likely to be fed up with a government that just takes care of poor, do-nothing losers. And you and I both know, and if you've been to Mexico, and I love Mexico, and I love the Mexican people, I'm going to tell you right now, right or left, their government is a disaster. It is the most mismanaged, horrible situation. And why? Because in a democracy of a country that is so poor, the government must cater to the losers. This is not a nice thing to say, but it's how it works. Can you imagine if our country were the way that the left dreams it to be, with more than half of the country on the take? Well, it's already happened. But we know that they want more of it. And why do they want more of it? Because when you've got more people on the take, when you have more than half of your country dependent on the government for sustenance, then what do you have? You control those people. You own them. They become your serfs. And the country becomes a democracy in name only. You have a subservient caste system where a majority of the country is beholden to the master. And the master being, of course, the government, and is almost always the left, because the left is the one that trades on this type of class warfare. And the left engages in vote buying, of course, right? It's vote buying. Look, no, if you think I'm joking about this, look, no Republican wins an election by saying, I am going to lower taxes for millionaires. They don't do that. Everybody promises something for the middle class and for the poor, because they recognize most of the country falls into that bracket. We are a fortunate country because we are a country that has still, at least for now, even in spite of Obama's best efforts, a strong middle class. And one of the things that will help carry the Trump revolution forward politically is going to be a resurgence of that middle class that is happening in this economy that's going gangbusters right now. None of this success is happening in Mexico. None of this raising of a standard of living is happening in Mexico. The craziest thing about Mexico, I'll tell you, because I love, you've heard me talk, I love Mexico City. You want to live in Mexico City? You want to buy a nice house in Mexico City? You think it's expensive or not expensive? What do you think? A lot of money, not a lot of money. Okay, by LA standards, so if you live in Los Angeles, let's say you're buying a nice home in Brentwood, I would say that you're going to spend about 20% more in Mexico City. That is from my casual observation as I have looked to see if perhaps I could purchase a small pied-à-terre somewhere in the nice part of town. It's very expensive. And why is that? Because the country is controlled by a small set of people that have enriched themselves tremendously because of their affiliations with the government, largely using the government to obtain political power, which in turn accumulates wealth. Poverty, we know this from economics, basically it's not a distribution problem. It is a what? A production problem. It's, you know, if somebody's poor, they're not producing enough or they're not creating a value. And one of the biggest impediments to somebody not producing enough is a situation, the political situation that either encourages or discourages it. And this is why liberalism and leftist socialism is so disastrous wherever it's tried. It doesn't matter if the people are white or brown or black or yellow. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the color of their skin. Wherever you are in whatever culture, socialism and leftism robs people of opportunity because it frames the entire issue of inequality in the wrong terms. It focuses on distribution. It takes away from the people that are producing, disincentivizing them from producing, and gives to people who it then incentivizes to not produce. It's literally the world. It's like gravity upside down. It's like my coffee that I'm drinking here. If I went into the kitchenette over here and poured myself this cup and ended up on the ceiling. That is economy 101 if you're a liberal. The coffee's on the ceiling because you are encouraging people to not produce. This is 100% what Mexico is about, what all these tinpot left-wing crazy countries are, where they have institutionalized socialism. I don't care what they call it. I don't care how democratic their republics are. It's socialism. And the only country that by and large has avoided chaos and disruption, for example, in South America, is Chile, where Pinochet came and cleaned it up, organized it, pulled out a little Milton Friedman, and set it on a collision course with greatness. Chile, even to this day, is the most thriving economy. It's nothing to do with the Chilean people being this, that, or the other. It is their government that ensures their success. It is their system of economics that ensures their success. So why am I talking about economics? Sam, why are you discussing all of this vis-a-vis immigration? Because it's simple. The fix is not ours to make. The fix is Mexico's. Mexico needs to fix this problem. And by allowing their government a release valve for all of their politically troublesome people to come over here and make do in the U.S., we are robbing Mexico of the opportunity to fix itself. We are literally making it more difficult for Mexico to get itself out using the democratic system to elevate itself from its currently substandard asshole position, to quote a Trump. Immigration is a stalking horse. This is just the whole issue is it's just the left uses this to advance its agenda in so many different. And by the way, complicit in this is the Republican establishment, because big business, the Chamber of Commerce, wants cheap labor. And I've said it here and I've said it again. Together, these two powerful interests in Washington, the left-wing crazies who want to ensure their power, combined with the right-wing establishment, they want illegals here. They won't say it, but they want it. And consequently, that is why they aren't doing anything about it. That's why crying Chuck Schumer is complaining that Trump can fix this with the stroke of a pen, even though he full well knows he can't. He full well knows that the only person who can fix this is the House and the Senate. And instead of them getting together and creating a legislative fix, they won't because they want to pass the buck. They don't want to see a fix. They want to keep the laws tough on the books. This is very important. If there's nothing you remember from this, remember this. They want to keep the laws tough on the books so every 2 years they can go back to their districts and say that they're tough on immigration. And then they want to turn to the president, who they already see as politically vulnerable, and have him nullify existing law by failing to enforce the very law that he ought to be enforcing. I'll explain more of that point when I get back. It's very important. It's not nuanced, and it ought to be at the front of your minds as you go into the next week and have all this be discussed. Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere. Back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Okay, if you fear I'm making a lot of this stuff up or just pulling it out of the thin air, you're wrong. I'm going to come and dial a friend here to help me out. Tom Campbell, who was not only a U.S. Congressman, also the dean of Chapman School of Law at the time that I attended, we've become good friends, wrote a book, a very erudite book on the separation of powers and practice. Now, Tom's a really smart guy, a brilliant attorney, but also a scholar. And so he takes apart the function of our government, looking at the three branches of government, the legislative, the executive, okay, and the judicial. Judicial being the courts, legislative being Congress, And the executive, referring, of course, to the president of the United States, but not just to the president, not just to the West Wing, but to all the agencies that come under its purview. Now, in going through the chapter that deals with the different branches of government, and the advantages of the separate branches section of the book, has a line in it or two here that I will share with you because it exactly sums up what the issue is. Now, Tom's a constitutionalist and a conservative thinker, and so he is framing this as a problem. And it correctly is a problem. I think it's a problem, too. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about that issue of nullification. I'm talking about how Congress doesn't want to do anything about immigration because they don't want to have blood on their hands come election time. They simply want the president, by his inaction, to nullify the law. So I quote from Tom Campbell's Separation of Powers and Practice. I don't want to sound too professorial here, okay, so just forgive me, but this is good stuff. It is a potential vice of the executive branch, right, of the presidency, that it can actually nullify the intent of the legislative branch by failing to bring enforcement actions in a particular area. The executive can also effectively veto a law. Veto a law. Think about this. Totally blow the law out by, and here the quote continues, by during the life of its administration by not spending money appropriated for the purpose, withholding cash. So, for example, if the law says somebody crosses the border illegally, arrest them. Arrest them. It's a felony and prosecute them. If that is the, what we call it, lawyers call it black letter law. When there's just no dispute to it, that's what the law says. If the black letter law is just that, one way the president can do it is just direct an order, an executive order, to not enforce it. Another thing the executive branch can do is just not fund it. Obama did this very effectively with the Border Patrol. He cut their funding, just didn't pay them. Agents quit. Didn't get their raises, they didn't hire new agents, and consequently, a lot of illegals got in. That's a real-time example of what Tom wrote years ago. Now, the other part of this, and he gets to it later, but I'll summarize it, is that prosecutorial discretion, where the government, Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, can choose who to prosecute and who, most importantly, not to prosecute. So even if the Border Patrol does its thing and says, we're doing our thing and look at us, we're enforcing it, you can still instruct the Attorney General. And it's completely lawful. This is how the separation of powers work. You can instruct the Attorney General to simply not enforce the law, making that law completely irrelevant. And this is, folks, how the game has been played. And Trump is turning it around on its head, saying, look, this is the law on the books. And, you know, my hot take on this in the moment on Tuesday when it began to look like he was going to cave, I thought it was going to be the biggest mistake of his presidency. But as the next day unfolded, I realized, look, what he did, what he was able to do is, at least on face value, give in, release some of this pressure that was building up. And force the ball back into Congress's court. Fine, I did it. I did what you told me to do. But I'm legally only allowed 20 days of togetherness. And I'm also legally obligated to prosecute everybody. So you fix it. And it's a ball back in your court. It is just, it's like Serena Williams. It's just smacking a tennis ball. Bam! Back in their court. And these Democrats, they're freaking out. Trust me, next week when we're back on air, I will play it for you. They were freaking out about this. And they're already talking about how, well, maybe we should just let everybody go. We should just let everybody go. I love it. Again, by design or by accident, Trump is outwitting them once again. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, we have our fun segment, Funny Friday, coming up next. Don't want to miss this one. It's good. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Majowski, Sam Nation. All right. What is funnier than getting blasted by a hot dog, shooting a hot dog in the face? Let me rephrase that. What's funnier than getting shot in the face by a hot dog, shooting a hot dog? This is what happened at a Phillies game, home game against the Cardinals on Monday. There's a woman named Kathy McVeigh. She's sitting in the stands, stoked as could be, rooting for her home team, when Philly the Fanatic aimed his hot dog gun, pressed a button, and fired into the stands. The hot dog, I don't know, this was some sort of a toy, I think. It wasn't an actual edible hot dog. Or was it? What? What? You supposed to just open your mouth and say, put it in here? Look, folks, let's be honest. Baseball games are dangerous. Depending on where you sit, you really have a chance of being shot with something. Now, I'm a big Angels fan. I try to go to a lot of games. And there, they have the T-shirt gun. And if you get shot with a T-shirt, apparently, it doesn't really hurt, right? It's just soft cotton. But apparently, this hot dog is wrapped in like duct tape. It's hard material. This woman got hit within the face. She looks like she went on a date with Orenthal James Simpson. Look at her. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, she's hurt. Put pictures of that in her safety deposit box. Look, so this happens. Does she have a case? No, she doesn't. I always have to go to that. Probably not. You sign away all your rights when you go into these baseball games. It's a risk that you take. I mean, getting hit by a baseball, she says, I could have expected that, but a hot dog? What the heck is this? But they do it at every game. And I think it would come down to a little bit about whether she knows how this happens. But again, I think most of this is all released on the back of the ticket. But at any rate, it conjures up a great little memory from 1957 baseball history. Do you know where I'm going with this? Have you heard about Richie Ashburn and the two foul balls? So apparently, back on August 17th, 1957, in Philadelphia during a game against the New York Giants, so not the Cardinals, but this time the Phillies are playing the Giants, Hall of Famer Richie Ashburn hits a foul ball that hits a woman named Alice Roth right in the face, breaks her nose, and the game is paused. Right? This is normal practice even now. They pause the game, and what do? They rush to your seat to make sure you're okay. Well, they came to her seat. Alice was not okay. So what did they have to do? They got the paramedics, right? Usually they have an ambulance on site. Even now in all major games, they have this. So the paramedics rush in, and they cart her off. They put her on a stretcher, are carting her off at the stadium, from the stadium, and this is when the game resumes. Normal, right? The emergency has been taken care of. So, as the game continued, the Phillies, again, Richie Ashburn is up at bat, player resumed, and he fouls off the first pitch thrown to him. The first pitch, he fouls, ball goes shooting into the stands, and hits the same woman, Alice Roth, in the knee, breaking her knee. You know, if I were Miss Roth, at this point, I'd just call it in, because life is hating you. If you've heard the story, you know it. But many of people in my generation don't remember this, so, or haven't heard the story. So that is, friends, what all can happen at the stadium. You can actually get hit with two foul balls, injuring multiple parts of your body. What are the chances? I mean, next to nil. But it happened in her case. Now, apparently Ashburn visited Roth in the hospital later. And since this happened a while back, we know how the story plays out. And they actually became very close friends. It's an interesting thing. They became quite close. And I think her son later became a bat boy for the Phillies, which I think is the least you could do. You know, if you hit somebody, slug them with, one to the face and one to the knee on one night, the least you can do is throw a sweet, cushy gig at their kid. So the boy got something out of it. But it's become... Oh, and he sent her a $500 diamond watch, which I think back in 1957, 500 big ones, that's a lot of money. So there it is, folks. If you go to a baseball game, expect to get hurt. And it may not just be a hot dog to the face. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, on Monday, televised hearings in the Senate grilling the current FBI head. What's his name? Christopher Wray? Christopher Wray looks like, how would I describe him? He looks a little bit like, well, I think if Steve Martin had a slightly nerdy younger brother, that's what Christopher Wray looks like. Very uninspiring. So I'm watching this transpire on TV live, and I'm bored by it. I'm generally bored by it because I'm just getting a lot of empty, nothing answers. And that is when the fireworks began. Senator Lindsey Graham, I did not expect this from Lindsey Graham, but Lindsey Graham showed up locked and loaded. And he let both these clowns have it from both barrels. Here is him getting at the core of the argument, right? Because what the issue in the Inspector General's report was, is that, yes, there were a series of biased communications between key people who made important decisions like whether to not prosecute Hillary. And then whether to open up an investigation into Trump-Russia, right? So these people are making important political decisions. But at the same time, there was no overt bias that led to these decisions being made. That was the conclusion, according to David Horowitz, the inspector general. And Graham was having none of it. And here is him grilling Horowitz on just the issue of letting Hillary off for the sake of political points. Listen to this.
Do you agree with me that finding her liable criminally would be inconsistent with stopping Donald Trump? If they found Hillary Clinton was criminally liable, that paves the way for Donald Trump.
I guess it would depend when, but yes, I could.
How about
see conceivably
July,
it could.
Or the convention.
It clearly could conceivably.
Well, not only clearly conceivably, that's exactly what's happening here, folks. Hmm. You cannot hold her criminally liable and stop him.
Yes, and it requires a suspension of disbelief to think that these agents, all of whom were crying their eyes out over Trump's loss, Hillary's loss, that these people didn't factor in their very sincerely held, deeply held political beliefs in their roles as decision makers in this process, talking specifically about Peter Strzok, the paramour of one Lisa Page, as Peter Strzok made decisions on the charging statement that Comey put out where they reduced the standard from, what is it, negligence to, you know, whatever, some carelessness, from negligence, criminal negligence to carelessness. And it's this issue that is addressed next up by Lindsey Graham. Listen to this.
Why did they change gross negligence in the original statement to reckless disregard?
I think I would defer to the inspector general who looked into that.
Why did they do that?
The explanation was that...
Can I just suggest something?
Yeah.
Gross negligence is a criminally liable standard.
Correct.
So if they had said it the way they originally wrote it, she's guilty of a crime, and the reason they changed it is because if you want to stop him, it can't be gross negligence. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between reckless disregard and gross negligence?
Not much.
It's a lot politically.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, the issue is it's a lot politically. Exactly. The political factor in changing it from a criminal standard, and he's wrong about the about Xu being guilty of a crime. Not guilty of a crime. Only a court can decide if she's guilty of a crime. The issue being, can Xu be criminally charged with a crime? And the reason Xu wasn't was because they changed the standard so that it used different words that wouldn't conform to the statute. And the relevant statute was ignored, and the language changed by Strzok working in cahoots with Comey. And all these clowns we're now led to believe that their political opinions had nothing to do with these actions. So Senator Graham laying the smackdown on this. Now, yes, I'm going to get to, because here, I'll just get to it right now. We'll go a little bit long in the segment. I got to get to this because Jim Jordan, Republican Utah, in the House Judiciary Committee, then on Tuesday, the following day, continued the barbecue grilling of Mr. Horowitz. And here is the Q&A. Listen closely.
Has Mr. Comey been fired?
Yes.
Has Mr. McCabe been fired?
Yes.
Did Mr. McCabe lie under oath, according to your report?
In our view, yes.
Has Mr. Rybicki left the FBI?
Yes.
Has General Counsel Jim Baker left the FBI?
Yes.
Has Lisa Page left the FBI?
Yes.
Was she reassigned prior to leaving the FBI?
I believe so.
And has Peter Strzok been removed from his position as deputy head of counterintelligence?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Horowitz, you've been in the DOJ for 10 years. You've been inspector general for 6 years. You're chief of all the inspector generals. Have you ever seen anything like this at any other federal agency in your time in the federal government? 6 of the top people fired, demoted, reassigned, or left?
I obviously can't speak broadly to other areas that I haven't known before, but yes, this is.
I've been in this town 11.5 years. I've never seen anything like this. Even the IRS scandal didn't come close.
That burning sound of meat on the grill. Get the barbecue sauce going because these people are going down. I'm telling you, Comey's getting investigated. You heard the latest. All right, back right after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Peter Fonda tweeted earlier, a few days back, saying that Trump's son, Barron, ought to be put in a cage filled with child molesters. Now, he retracted the statement, but in the same week, we find out that there is a Rosie spinoff going on without Rosie. Roseanne, whatever. Roseanne, that's not the point. Roseanne gets skewered, discarded, loses her job, loses her contract, everything done. Because what? She ostensibly calls Valerie Jarrett a baboon or whatever it is. And Peter Fonda can go ahead and do this. And his deal, he's got a production deal coming up. It hasn't been taken away. There's no calls for, there are calls, but they're being disregarded. This is such total hypocrisy. That's why conservatives are angry. And by the way, the more the media does things like this, the more they think that they know best, the more that they use their standards of judging people, making decisions, the more they do that and disregarding the vox populi, the flyover country, the silent majority, the more they become irrelevant. Nobody cares. Let's be real. The Fondas are just disgusting people, period. Full stop. And there's nothing of Jane Fonda's that I would ever watch. And now I'll put Peter in the same boat. None. Done. It's just gross. And so you and I, we can vote with our dollars. We don't have to, we don't have to get on Twitter and lament and agonize and yell at people. That's not what we do. We leave that to the shrill left. But we quietly can choose where to not spend our money. And that's what I recommend that we do. Now, a funny, other funny story here. I want to get to the, what do you make of this jacket? I haven't asked anybody here in studio. Melania Trump goes down to the border and she says, wearing a jacket, I don't care, do you? There's a sign on the back of it. I really don't care, do you? And the left, oh my gosh, they're going crazy. What do you make of this? Missy, I didn't ask you. What do you make of this, Missy? What do you think of this? See, everybody thinks that it is that there is either a statement or not a statement. I have a hard time believing that it's not a statement, but I also have to ask you what is she trying to say? Who is she saying I don't care to? And I think that this is a week where Melania really got upset. You remember she called the Peter Fonda thing into the Secret Service. It was that alarming. And I talked to a Secret Service guy who's retired, and I asked him about this. And is this something that the Secret Service is going to investigate, or is it just an idle statement by a typical Hollywood celebrity? And he said, no, definitely in my day, certainly they would investigate it. This is a big deal. So you've got Melania Trump is pissed right now. Her marriage is being dissected and tormented and taken apart by everybody and anybody. And then you've got her kids under attack. And you know, no, I don't think she has a coat for every statement, but I think that if she could wear a coat right now that has a middle finger extended on it, I think she'd put it on. I would. So, oh, I love what Twitter did with it. They put a picture of Schumer crying, of his face crying. There, I fixed it. I think that's what Don Jr. did. He said, there, I fixed it. He put crying Chuck Schumer's face on the back of the jacket. Look, it's a lot about nothing. And the other thing that I suspect this is, folks, is a brilliant distraction, because now people are talking about the jacket. They're not talking about anything else. They're distracted by the jacket. The media is so dumb. They're like dogs. You know, they're coming after you, throw them a piece of meat, and they go chasing after that and forget everything that they were doing the moment before. All right, we are out of time. Enjoy your weekend. I hope for some good weather so we can get some barbecuing done, not just of Christopher Wray and Inspector General Horowitz. Expect more on this immigration debate to be falsified and fake newsed out. Follow the podcast. Go on iTunes. Tell your friends about it. They need to be here because they need to be informed. Love you guys. This show would not be what it is without you. Sam Rachofsky, over and out. Keep on rolling.